I'll begin this morning with one of Shindan Shonin's Wasan hymns. This particular Wasan describes the Buddha's mind of non-discrimination, the Buddha's mind that aspires to save everyone without any distinction between rich or poor, man or woman, regardless of where a person's from or how they've lived up to this point. The Buddha has great compassion for all beings, and that's expressed in these words.
仏様の大慈悲の すべてのものを平等に救いたい お心を表す和さんをいただいてから始まりたいと思います。
Please join me in 合唱をお願いします。 The liberating wheel of light is without bound. Each person it touches, it is taught, is freed from attachments to being and non-being. So take refuge in Amida, the enlightenment of non-discrimination.
Gedatsu no kōrin ki wa monashin kōsoku kamuru mono wa mina Eme o hanaru to nobeta mo byodo kakuni kimyo se yo.
Namandabutsu, 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 namandabutsu. Good morning, everyone. Minasan, ohayou gozaimasu. Little bit tired this morning, maybe, from all of those who worked hard yesterday at Mochitsuki, but thankfully we had a lot of help and everybody worked hard, and so I think we got done in relatively good time. So I want to thank you very much for Mochitsuki. Mochitsuki is one of our big events of the month of December. However, here at the Buddhist temple, we wouldn't say it's the biggest event. It's not the major service for the month of December. Does anyone remember what our major service for this month was? I just gave you a little clue. We already did it. Did it last week. You remember? Do you remember, Nicole? It was Bodhi Day. That's right. Yes, Dilma? It's Honko, our celebration of Shinran Shonin's passing into the Pure Land. We do that in January. That's the most major service that we do. But, however, this month, our big service, as Nicole said, is Bodhi Day. And what is Bodhi Day about? Yes, Dilma? That's right. When the Buddha attained enlightenment, sitting beneath the Bodhi tree. Remember, we had the Bodhi tree here? I don't think our junior YBA can forget about the Bodhi tree because they helped me move it back out. And it was very, very heavy because it's in a nice pot now. But so this month, we think about the Buddha, we think about the Buddha's enlightenment, and we think about the life of the Buddha. And last week, we talked a little bit about the Buddha and his journey to enlightenment. And he left his home. Do you remember what kind of home the Buddha had before he left? Yeah, does anybody remember? Yeah, Dilma, do you remember?
A palace.
He lived in a palace, that's right. Why would he live in a palace? Anybody else have an idea? Yeah? Can you tell me, Dilma, why he lived in a palace?
His father was the king,
that's right. His father was the king, and he expected his son to be the king, to be the future king. So, do you remember what he did? He lived in the palace and then he left. He went out from the palace. And how did his family feel about that when they woke up in the morning and realized he was gone? What did they think? Yes, Dilma? They were very disappointed. They were very disappointed. Of course, his father, the king, was disappointed, right? Because who was going to be the next king? right? His wife, Yasudhara, she was very disappointed because who was going to help her raise their son, Rahula, right? And his adoptive mother, so Siddhartha's birth mother, remember she passed away right after he was born, shortly after he was born, but his aunt, Mahaprajapati, she was also married to the king. So back in those days, kings could have more than one wife. This was very common among kings. And so King Suddhodana, the Buddha's father, he had several wives. He had a few wives. And one of those wives was Mahaprajapati, the sister of Queen Maya. And so she then raised the Buddha as her own son. So it was like her own son had left, right? She was very upset. The whole family was very upset, and they were very worried in the palace. Who is going to be the next king? Who's going to take over? Right? They were very concerned. And so they thought, well, at least we have Rahula. At least we have Rahula. Rahula was the Buddha's son. And so they thought, oh, Rahula, he'll be the king. He'll be the next king. So we'll just have to, somehow manage until he's big enough. Yes, Yoma. Okay, we can talk about it later. Okay? And then the Buddha, he went off. As we talked about last week, he became enlightened. Then he returned to the palace. And we've talked about this before. But when he returned to the palace, yes, Yoma?
Was the old king going to retire?
Well, in those days, the king remained the king until he passed away for his whole life. He was the king, so yeah, he didn't get to retire. He just kept being the king, right? He kept being the king, and he was looking forward to his grandson, and he had to keep being the king because his grandson was very young, and he had to wait until his grandson would grow up to be able to be king. However, when the Buddha returned, he went back to the palace after he'd been gone for about 7 years, and he shared the Dharma with his family, and several of his family members said, hey, this is wonderful. I'd like to join you. I'd like to join this Sangha that you have. So you know who else joined the Sangha? Rahula, the Buddha's son, joined the Sangha. Oh no. Then the king said, okay. Well, my first son and his son, they're gone. But fortunately, I have more than one wife. So I have more than one son. I have one more son. His name is Nanda. He was Mahaprajapati's son. So her son, the Buddha's half-brother, he was next in line. You know what he did? He joined the Sangha. Oh no. So they worried for many years. And then finally, when King Suddhodana was very, very old and he was just about to pass away, he knew his time was soon. He knew he was going to pass away soon because everyone passes away. And everyone asked, who's going to be the next king? Shall we see if Rahula or Nanda will come back to the palace? Let's ask the Buddha if we can have them come back. And so they invited the Buddha to come back to the palace. He went to see his father, and the Buddha had been very close to his father. He had continued to teach him the Dharma, and they said, is it possible that Nanda or Rahula could return? And the Buddha said, you know, they have both committed themselves to the life of the Dharma. They're no longer suitable to be a king. However, I have a cousin who has been a servant of the king, who has worked very, very hard for our country. His name is Mahanama. I suggest that Mahanama be the king. And so everyone agreed, okay, Mahanama, he can take over the palace. So the problem was solved. Everybody knew Mahanama would be a good king. So Mahanama took over. And after King Suddhodana passed away, the Buddha's father passed away, then Mahaprajapati, she was so sad. She was so sad because she was kind of all alone, right? Her son, her grandson, her adoptive son rather, her husband, they had all left the palace in one way or another. And so she began to think about all those teachings, all those sermons that she'd heard from the Buddha when he would come home for a visit. And she thought, you know, now is the time for me to join the Sangha. Now is the time for me to also join my family in the Sangha. And she thought about it. She said, you know, there are lots of other women whose husbands have left and joined the Sangha, become monks. And they're all alone too, but they appreciate how wonderful this teaching is, and they too would like to join the Sangha. So she approached the Buddha, and she said, World Honored One, at this time, I would like to join the Sangha, and there are many women who would like to come with me. We'd like to form a bhikkhuni Sangha. The men were called the bhikkhus, the monks. We'd like to form a Sangha of nuns. How about it? The Buddha said, not right now, not this time, right? So she said, okay, and she went home. She went back a few days later. You know, I talked to all these women, we're very dedicated. We want to follow this path of your teachings. How about it? Can we form the Bhikkhuni Sangha? The Buddha said, not right now, not this time, right? So she went home. She thought, okay. One more time. Third time's the charm, right? We'll ask one more time. So she returned once more to the Buddha and said, please, we beseech you, let us form the Sangha. Let us pursue the path of awakening. Let us pursue the teachings that you've provided in the way that you and the other monks are practicing. Let us do this too. The Buddha said, not right now, not this time. She was so sad. Yes, Yoma.
But why did you say not right now?
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you how I appreciate this story. So it's not over. The story isn't over. So Mahaprajapati, she gathers all the other nuns, the other women who would like to be nuns together, and she says, we must show the Buddha. We must show the Sangha how committed we are. They had beautiful long hair, beautiful jewelry, beautiful saris, beautiful clothes that they wore. They took off their jewelry. They shaved off all their hair, just like the monks, because that's how they let go of their attachments. They washed off all their makeup. They traded their fancy saris for the simple saffron robes that the monks would wear. They dressed just as the members of the Bhikkhu Sangha dressed, and they said, after they'd made these preparations, let us go and join the Sangha. So the Sangha had already left. The Bhikkhu Sangha had left, and they had journeyed several villages over. And so the Bhikkhuni Sangha began to pursue them. And every village they would go to, they would say, is the Buddha here? No, the Buddha's already left. He went that way. So they would follow. And because they were trying to catch up, they had to walk even faster than the monks, right? To catch up. They had to walk even longer hours so that when they finally arrived at the village where the Buddha and the other monks were dwelling, their feet were all red and swollen. They had blisters, right? Their legs were all dusty. They were tired. And when Ananda, the Buddha's close disciple, saw them, he said, oh, I haven't seen that group of monks before, right? Because from a distance, they looked the same. No hair, same clothes. But then as they approached, he recognized who was leading the group? Mahaprajapati, the Buddha's adopted mother. Queen Mahaprajapati, what are you doing? What is the meaning of this? He was so moved when he saw them, and she said, we too wished to join the Sangha. I asked the Buddha three times, and three times he turned down my request. And Ananda was very compassionate, very kind. And he said, let me talk to the Buddha. Let me have a word with the world-honored one. So he went to the Buddha, and he said, oh, world-honored one, these women have traveled for 15 days, walking all day. They're so committed, led by Queen Mahaprajapati. Will you accept them into the Sangha? The Buddha said, not now. It's not the time. Right? So Ananda went back, said, not right now. Then Ananda said, okay, let's try again. Went back a second day. Will you accept these women? Let us form a bhikkhuni sangha. Not right now. Not right now. One more time, Ananda returns. Can we establish the bhikkhuni sangha? The Buddha says, not right now. Still, right? Ananda felt the same way. Not yet. So Ananda thought, let's take a different tack. Let's talk about this in a different way. Let's have a dialogue. The Buddha always taught by asking questions. So Ananda said, may I ask you a question, world-honored one? The world-honored one, the Buddha, always welcomed questions. The Buddha said, of course, anything. Ananda says, if a woman were to pursue the same practices we're doing, just like a monk, if she were to dedicate herself to your teachings, would it be possible for a woman to gain the fruit of enlightenment? Could a woman become enlightened just like a man? Buddha said, absolutely, of course, without a doubt. Okay, now let's consider the case of Queen Prajapati. She raised you as her own son. She cared for you from when you were a helpless little baby. She has shown her dedication to the Sangha. She has supported you. She has gathered a group of women who are equally dedicated, and they have traveled for 15 days by foot to be here to show their commitment. Why can't we gather these women and form the Bhikkhuni Sangha, the Sangha of nuns? The Buddha said, call together all of the senior monks and let us consider this matter together. So he gathered all the monks, the senior monks, Shariputra, Mahamoggallayana, all of the senior monks gathered together, the leaders of the Sangha, who would be leading the Sangha after the Buddha had passed over into Parinirvana. The Buddha said, what do you think? What do you think about this? What do you think about these women? Is there any reason that these women should not be allowed to join the Sangha? Can you give me one good reason why we can't form the Bhikkhuni Sangha? Three times they have asked me. Three times I said no, and still they persist. Three times Ananda came to ask me. Three times I said no, and still they persist. Do they not have the same dedication that all of you had? When all of you came, I welcomed you immediately. Have they not shown even greater commitment to this path? No one could give a reason why not to form the Bhikkhuni Sangha, right? At this time, women were very much discriminated against. Boys and girls weren't treated equally. It was a different time. The Buddha knew that. He understood. He understood his times. He understood the way that people think. And he knew that after he was gone, anything that he established, any aspect of the Sangha, would have to continue on. Everyone in the community would have to have no doubt that this was the correct path. And so I believe that the Buddha waited until this moment to say, now is the time to form the Bhikkhuni Sangha, when no one could have any doubt, no one could have any questions about whether or not women were equal to men. This was a revolutionary idea. People didn't think like that at the time of the Buddha. But the Buddha said, now we will establish the Bhikkhuni Sangha that will exist along with the Bhikkhu Sangha. And they made certain rules and certain guidelines so that the Bhikkhuni Sangha could exist in harmony with the Bhikkhu Sangha, so that you could have men and women getting along. Marvelous idea, isn't it? Living in harmony, living cooperatively, living with mutual respect. So he established these rules, and he established rules so that the women, the bhikkhunis, would be able to receive the wonderful teachings, so that the best of the Buddha's disciples would also go to teach the Bhikkhuni Sangha after the Buddha had passed over to the other shore. So in each era, even to today, we have problems with men and women not being treated equally, not being given fair chances. This is still a problem that we have in our world. And in each era, the Buddhas have recognized this and have set aside certain guidelines, certain teachings to ensure that people who follow the path of the Buddha Dharma know that men and women both are able to realize enlightenment. We have the same base passions. That's what Shinran Shonin teaches. That's what we find in the teachings on Amida Buddha. Humans, all men or women, struggle with greed, anger, and selfishness. And so the Buddha provides a path for men and women equally to realize liberation. In these words of Shinran Shonin that I read at the start of my talk, it says, "The liberating wheel of light is without bound. Each person it touches. The light is the Buddha's wisdom. Each person who receives that, whether man or woman, rich or poor, no matter where they're from or what they look like, is freed from attachments to being and non-being." Being and non-being is like, I'm a man, I'm not a woman. Or, I'm an American, I'm not North Korean. Right? We have all these ideas. I am this, I'm not that. And we create these false distinctions, these fake differences between one another. The Buddha says that to live in the Dharma is to be free of all these fake differences. Yes, Gilma. That's true. People have all different kinds of mixes, right? Some people are part Japanese and part, part American, whatever that means. And some people are part Mexican and part American or whatever. People are all different kinds of things. And so we're all human beings. And these differences are all illusions. They're not something that's real. And so when we receive the light of the Buddha's wisdom and the Nembutsu, then we let go of all of these differences, right? And we take refuge in Amida, the enlightenment of non-discrimination. That's the awakened mind of the Buddha. And so Mahaprajapati, she's a great hero in our Buddhist tradition because she had the dedication to continue, to persist, to show us that men and women are equally capable of enlightenment. And the Buddha, he established the conditions for her to live by that example, to show us, and then eventually to welcome her into the Sangha. The reason he didn't welcome her right away is because he wanted to make sure that once the Bhikkhuni Sangha was established, that no one could doubt the commitment and dedication of these women who sought the exact same enlightenment as the Bhikkhu Sangha. So I'll conclude once again by reading these words of Shinran Shonin. Shinran Shonin no kotoba o itadaite owaritai to omoimasu. Please join me in gassho. Gassho o onegai shimasu. The liberating wheel of light is without bounds. Each person it touches, it is taught, is freed from attachments to being and non-being. So take refuge in Amida, the enlightenment of non-discrimination.
Amida Butsu no Satori no Hikari wa doko made mo hatte hatashi naku terasu. Kono Hikari wa hataraki o ukeru mono wa minna umu no jakken o hanaruru koto to iwareteru. すべてのとらわれを離れされる平等学に奇妙するがよいと。
南無阿弥陀仏、南無阿弥陀仏、南無阿弥陀仏、南無阿弥陀仏、南無阿弥陀仏、南無阿弥陀仏、南無阿弥陀仏。